You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Recut this trailer with the voice of the guy who did all the Disney trailers in the 70s from the magical world of, you know, I don't think that would work, but it would be funny to me.
It's got Captain Hook in it, so yeah, I guess it would work.
Was that what Garrett Hedlund was Captain Hook?
Yeah, he was Captain Hook in what, that Peter Pan movie?
Pan?
And Pan, yeah. He did the exact same accent.
It was ironically panned.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, this is not a happy-go-lucky tale.
Not at all.
In rural Mississippi. Is there any story ever filmed in rural Mississippi that you would describe as happy?
I have not seen it yet.
Yeah.
I can't think of any.
You know, Song of the South? I don't even know where that was.
Yeah.
I don't know either.
That's more problematic than
that. Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody was happy in it. It's just in retrospect, they're like,
they're happy.
Were they really
problematic?
Yeah, exactly. This, like I said, rural, in very mud-bound rural Mississippi.
Yeah, was that it?
With two families trying to deal with their own issues. You've got Jason Clark and his new wife, Carrie Mulligan, who have moved with their multiple children out to what was supposed to be buying this big tract of land as a farm to farm it, but have a really nice house in town. Well, it turns out the really nice house in town was total scam, and they're forced to live in the ramshackle old farmhouse out there out of lack of choice because they spent all their money doing it. Meanwhile, there's the African-American family that is that stays on the land and works the
land.
They're
the sharecroppers.
Yeah, the sharecroppers. And their story is definitely the more interesting of the two stories,
Sure.
I would say. It's
absolutely
definitely the one that we're paying more attention to. But the upshot is Garrett Hedlund plays the brother to Jason Clark, who's come home from World War II with severe PTSD, as did the African-American kid. Was it Ron Sell?
Ron Sell. He's the oldest son.
By Jason Mitchell, who you know, also went there, and he was a hero. He was a tank sergeant. He was like, you know, did a lot of heroic stuff, was treated as a hero. Like the people in France were like, well, I don't give a fuck what color your skin is. You came here and you saved our ass. Thanks a lot. Thanks for remembering France, douchebags. Anyway.
They gave us that statue.
Yeah, they gave us that statue. They didn't want it. It was just in their garage.
It was such a re-gift, those motherfuckers.
it was one of those re-gifts. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, of course he gets back at his – I mean, go to Mississippi. It's like, come on. You're not going to get much more racist in America than probably rural Mississippi.
Alabama would have a word.
in the early 1950s, late 40s. But they form a sort of weird drunken friendship based on the fact that only each other in this whole area really understands what the other one is going through. Meanwhile, Jason Clark, as always, is playing just kind of a real douchebag, wormy guy.
There's a lot of characters in this movie that are one-dimensional. Not, I don't know if it's on purpose or on accident or if they just didn't give them enough to do kind of thing. Like specifically Jason Clark, I feel.
Yeah.
And the guy who plays his dad,
Jonathan
which is
Banks.
Well, Jonathan Banks. Who's great but in this. But yeah, he is the unadulterated, unrepentant, hardcore racist.
Yeah, the Klan guy.
Yeah. I think Jason Clark is a little bit more complicated than you guys are giving him credit for. He's not necessarily a sympathetic character. What he is doing is the norm. He does not view himself as a bad person. It's his job to make money off this farm. That means the people who work for him have to provide a certain quota. And if they can't make that quota, then he has to penalize them. And in his mind, this is what he has to do. And as we find out, he himself is struggling financially. But his entire success is dependent on the exploitation of the people who work for him.
Yeah.
That's the thing about the movie, though, is that with Jason Clark's character, even though he's supposed to be a little more – have more depth to him, I really didn't feel like – that it came across that way for a lot of the story.
Well, he is not, unlike his father, he's not a card-carrying member of the Klan. He's not the guy who's going to string you up. But he's not going to stop it either. He's kind of this sort of acquiescent guy in the middle, he is the sort of definition of the guy who, you know, you could have done something, but you chose not to because the system benefits you.
And I felt like Carey Mulligan is actually, who is a wonderful actress, but really takes a lot of roles that are not dissimilar to this. She loves playing roles that, where she gets all dirty in the dust or the mud. I don't know what it is.
I mean, she is a sophisticated woman or a naive young woman who marries this guy mainly just to get out of the house.
Thinking that like, oh, and it's great at first. They're living in the city and everything's fine. And then they're like, oh, we're going to live in this great big house and own a farm. That'll be cool. And then realizing they're going to have to live in the shithole. This is not the life she wanted. And I just felt her story, like as shown, wasn't as anywhere near as interesting as it felt like it had the potential to be.
There was much potential on her side of the story, especially for that side of the family kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because out of, like you're saying, that the African-American family had a lot more going for them when it came to story than, you know, Jason Clark's side. Yeah. But her stuff on that side was the most interesting thing about the movie for me.
Yeah. Well, no, Rob Morgan, I think. Yeah. Rob Morgan is a guy you've seen in a lot of stuff. Yeah, he's a busy character.
Playing the father, I think he's the standout.
He's the standout. Absolutely. This is also a Netflix film, and it's worth mentioning that Rob Morgan appears in multiple Netflix series.
Yeah, it's become clear that Netflix has, like...
They have an ensemble.
They love him.
Yeah, an ensemble cast they keep coming back to.
He's on that short list, but this is the first time he's really had a chance, at least on the Netflix roster, had a chance to really shine and play a large role. He's the closest, at least for the first half of the movie, I thought, oh, this is the lead. And at some point I realized, no, this is not a movie where there's a lead character. This is an ensemble. And that leads me to, I think, the thing that most of us kind of waffled on a little bit here. We disagreed a little bit, which was the use of voiceover. Every time Rob Morgan's voiceover comes on, I'm just gripped because he's just so captivating.
But he should have been the only character to have a voiceover, which is the problem.
This is obviously, I think, a carryover from the novel. I think they're trying to capture some of the beauty of the language. But if you look at all the characters who have voiceovers, the Carey Mulligan character, the Rob Morgan character, the Ron Zell character, the Garrett Hedlund character, they're the sympathetic ones. And if you look at them all, these are all the characters who are in a situation in life where they cannot articulate what they have to say. They have no power, or God forbid they say what's on their mind, they're going to get some shit. You have this woman who is struggling and is being forced to follow her husband's lead. You have the black sharecropper who just wants to keep his family safe. You have the black soldier who came back and is now suddenly treated as a pariah when he should be treated as a hero. And you have the white fighter pilot guy who is crippled by PTSD in a time when you didn't talk about those kind of things. So while the voiceover, I think, is a weakness, they rely too much on it. I do appreciate that what the director is trying to do is give voice to people who normally didn't have a voice.
I get his reasoning. It doesn't make it any less of a cop-out. What you do if you want to turn a book into a movie is you find a way to have the characters express that in dialogue.
And they do. Yeah. And I think they do it mainly just through looks, through performance. I think this is strongest when anytime you use just Rob Morgan, just when somebody walks in and knocks on the door in the middle of the night and the look of fear of apprehension. Mm-hmm. You don't need a voiceover to know exactly what's going through his mind.
That's the other thing. Most of the voiceovers were really kind of extraneous information. You're like, I didn't really need this here. It felt like you wanted to throw in some of the poetry of the book, but it's a movie. Don't do that. It just takes you out of it and reminds you, oh yeah, this is a book.
Yeah, the voiceover also just sort of made some sequences not make as much sense sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing. Like, I felt like certain times they would talk about something and then immediately the next scene that was, like, played right after that had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I think there was a choice to dramatize some scenes and, like, you know what, we're not going to dramatize this scene. We'll just do the voiceover and that'll be sufficient.
It was like, it felt like this specificity of going to these different characters, like, oh, now we're going to, like, have a chapter break and view more of their story. But that's not what it is. And it just feels very out of place and uncomfortable. Like I said, several issues I had with this movie that otherwise has been getting a lot of praise. This is from director Dee Rees, who got a lot of praise previously for her feature films Pariah and Bessie, neither of which I have seen, I don't think. But
Richard and I reviewed Bessie. It was a good... TV series.
Okay.
Not a series, I'm sorry. It was a film for HBO, and it was The Life of Bessie Smith by Queen Latifah. And it was really, really good.
But I just, you know, I was just kind of meh on this one. And one of the reasons is, sorry, who the fuck wants to spend 132 minutes in 1940s rural Mississippi? No one.
Everybody like, who ever read a Faulkner novel?
And I'm just kind of like, yeah, but that's a book. You know, and a lot of the Faulkner film adaptations haven't been that great either.
Now that's true.
So it's like,
so maybe they should have stuck a little closer to the book.
Just kind of exhausting. I don't know what to tell you. I'm like, I was not enjoying this. I didn't think it was telling me anything that I haven't been told from multiple other films and much better than this. And well, I thought, with the exception of Rob Morgan, most of the performances were just okay.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Art is not obligated to entertain you.
Well, it is if you want to make money.
Well, that art isn't there to make money. Now you're talking about commerce. If you want to commerce, go see Justice
but
League.
But we are seeing commerce. We're film critics. We're not going to see an exhibit at the museum. So
the thing about this movie that like I think a lot of us aren't really touching on is the it's very saturated in history, though.
Absolutely.
Because history used to be one of my better subjects back when I was in high school, and I still really enjoy it every now and then. And this movie really showed, like, you know, reminded you about certain things in our past that we shouldn't ever forget, kind of thing.
Correct.
Specifically, the way we treated a lot of people after the war had ended, kind of thing. Also, I actually did enjoy the relationship between, you know, Garrett Hedlund with his fucking weird, you know, pirate. Or not a pirate thing, but his weird cowboy accent that he had with the guy who played Ronsel.
You're still like, that's Hook, dude.
Yeah, he was just Hook. I'm sorry. But
named you Hook. I'm going to call you Hook.
But he, his relationship with Ronsel I thought was actually really compelling because it's a lot of just like him just trying to get over the fact that he's back and shit went bad. And he doesn't know what to do anymore kind of thing. He's struggling, you know, with his brother. He's struggling not to try to fuck his sister-in-law kind of thing. Yeah. He's struggling just, like, with his relationship with father kind of. Like, honestly, besides, you know, Carey Mulligan's character, I think he had the second better arc of that side of the family.
And they experienced different ways of life that they would have never experienced had they stayed home.
Yeah.
And it's very much a kind of how you're going to keep them down on the farm once they've seen Perry, you know. They come back to this world and they no longer fit in it.
Yeah, I feel
because
like I would
have seen the world.
I would have stayed where it was and just wrote a letter. Hey, I'm in Paris now. Feel free to come visit somewhere.
I would have just sent a letter. I totally died. Don't come looking for me.
I'm dead.
You know, it's for me. It's also a
or my hot German wife.
I appreciate seeing like you know some detail on the life of sharecropping and the way that system worked. And essentially became another type of enslavement. We've seen a lot of films that just deal in the misery of slavery. I understand why anyone would be exhausted, but the idea of sharecropping, I don't think, is as well represented.
It doesn't come up a lot, kind of thing.
You know, because everyone figures, oh well, these guys are just getting paid. It's like no, it's like you owed the man. You know, you like the song goes, you know, I sold my soul to the company store. When the guy goes, well, you're going to be behind, so I'm just going to give you this mule and I'll just take it out of your. It's like, whoa, I can't afford the meals. No. I'll give it to you, you know, but we'll just take it out of your wages. Which, of course, the character of Hap is like desperately trying to save money so he can buy his own land, which is his own form of economic freedom. Yet the sharecropper thinks he's doing him a solid, but also is exploiting him because he's like, look, I'm going to put you in debt so you can get me out of debt. And that's how that system worked and perpetuated itself for so many years. It just became a de facto form of slavery.
And the thing that I liked about the movie as well is that it showed that it wasn't just, you know, black people that had to deal with sharecropping.
Sure. There were white families, too, that were struggling with it. And they got stuck in that economic system that no one could ever get out.
Like, it's a small side of the story kind of thing. But it was a much appreciated little side of the story, I think, honestly. But Chris is right about a lot of things about this movie. Is that this movie just isn't all that captivating in its length kind of thing. Because sometimes I felt like there's a lot of stuff that could have been cut out. I thought they did a good job at portraying some of the battles for World War II, except for like one or two little weird effects here and there.
I definitely felt lesser thought was given to that.
And then random naked people just show up in the middle of it kind of thing.
Well, you know, I totally understand where Chris is coming from and where you're coming from, Michael. I think I like this film a little bit better than you guys did. It's not like my favorite movie of the year by a long shot.
Oh, no.
But I appreciate what they were trying to do.
Keep going into your
and they
thoughts.
Failed into. If they failed, it was a failure of trying too hard. And they try to put too much of the book in. They try to put too many characters, too many side stories. And maybe that's where it came apart. For me, the performances from Mary J. Blige to Rob Morgan all across the board were solid. Some were better than others. And again, I will get into my final thoughts, but I had a conversation a while back with a friend of mine who has a teenage daughter, and I was bitching about superhero movies. And I said, you know what? I don't ever need to see another movie where I see Bruce Wayne's parents die. We all know that happens. He's like, my daughter doesn't. What are you talking about? She's like, yeah, I was talking to her about Batman. She likes Batman. She has no idea that Bruce Wayne's parents died, and that's why he became Batman. So that's why I have to see Bruce Wayne's parents die every 10 years. That comes back to this. Yes, we've seen this kind of thing. Yes, we know where it's going. Yes, we understand the misery. But every generation, you've got someone who has not experienced this story, which is much more important than some rich kid's parents getting shot in an alleyway.
We agreed to disagree.
Yeah, you know. So...
dream
anyway,
sequences.
Think of all the lives Batman has saved, Marco, because
all the fictional lives. Think about all the real lives that have been destroyed, Chris. Keep your candy. We need some steak and potatoes to feed the kids. This is a nutritious meal that you're not going to enjoy the taste of all the time. In that regards, I give it some appreciation. I think I agree with Chris. It's flawed, but I appreciate what it tried to do. I give this 7 out of 10 mud-stained boots.
Are you saying people don't like steak? Because that's just blasphemy.
Kids.
Kids not liking steak. That's also blasphemy.
Mike?
But I'll go to my final thoughts. But overall, I thought the movie, it has a lot going for it. Honestly, like, I could recommend it to, like, maybe some people who are fans of some stuff about history, as well as an idea of seeing a small slice of life at a certain time. Mm-hmm. The climax of the movie was a little emotional here and there, but... the voiceover and a few other things made it kind of confusing, like certain little actions in it. Like, it made you think certain things happened that didn't actually happen, kind of thing. And then, as I did a little research about the book after we came out of the movie, and I found out that they changed the ending, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, they changed the ending because there's actually a sequel to that book about... part of the ending kind of thing, which I won't go into because it'll spoil it kind of thing.
Good to know.
But it was one of those things where I'm like, well, but I felt like that changed ending probably was the better thing to have though with a movie like this, especially after that climax.
I think it had to give you some sense of hope.
Yeah.
Rather than make you sit through another movie to get to the hopeful part.
Yeah. And I honestly, I would have to give it 6.5 out of 10. People falling off a ladder.
I'm sorry. I mean, I get that this movie obviously meant a lot more to you, Marco. I just still... and I have seen other things with sharecroppers, but also I like reading American history a bit.
I'm not calling you a philistine.
I'm hyper familiar with this period.
Sure.
It's despite, you know... it's being interesting in a history of the...
Assassin's Creed doesn't count, Chris. Everyone knows that.
Of America, I don't particularly enjoy watching it play out.
Fair enough.
I don't find it a fast, interesting time. And that's on me?
No.
I don't think that's like necessarily a failing. I want to some degree, I want to watch movies that I can find joy in. Even if they're about misery, I want to at least artistically find triumph. And I didn't find any artistic triumph in this movie. I thought it repeatedly tries and fails in terms of trying to be artistic. Like I said, aforementioned narration sequences, which I thought were an embarrassing failure of structure for this film. It was so pointedly bad. I was like, what are you doing? And like I said, performances that I thought were just okay. You don't put Garrett Hedlund in as your lead if you're thinking you want an Oscar caliber performance.
He's got to be Captain Hook.
I found this thoroughly mediocre. I really did. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to be like, what? How did you not find this important and meaningful? Well, I didn't. I don't know what to tell you. I give it 5 out of 10 pieces of brain stuck to a cockpit window. There was a certain amount of that. This movie could have used more cockpit brains.
I was expecting
cockpit brains cost money, Chris.
I was expecting a flash forward where it turns out that Garrett Hedlund's was the great great ancestor of Flynn and Tron Legacy.
I like what you think. I would have enjoyed that movie.
I would have enjoyed it much more.
Yeah, or like he comes back and his parents are dead and he becomes like a 40s Batman.
Exactly. Yeah. I would watch that movie.
Then it would have resonance and meaning, Marco. Then,
yeah,
you just like he has all the flashes of like the pure pearls falling, except instead of like the pearls hitting the ground, it's brains on the cockpit.
I thought you were going to say it was just crops landing on the ground.
Just crops.
Well, you know, everybody knows about the Wayne's family death, so
not your friend's daughter,
apparently not. But not everybody knows about the ills of sharecropping in the rural South in the 1940s and the way that African Americans were treated after they returned from the war.
And if
this is their first experience, I hope it's not their only experience with that history. But if this is your first experience with it, it has some value in that alone.
And all I can say is, they're not making a giant shared universe based on this.
No, they're not.
Maybe it's a prequel to Black Panther. We don't know.
No, it is not.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.